are
quick with that record button.
Hit that record.
The curtain has not been drawn yet.
All right, let me get into Discord
here. Do like instead
of on the native app.
Oh, I forgot to update the titles. That's good. We are the pre-hive launch party again.
Excellent.
Well, you can always stop recording and start again. I've seen Walt do that too when he forgets.
I'll just leave it.
I hear.
I has all the listeners in the Discord. You are at the cat's attention. Nice. Daughter McSpadden is going to come run the show. McDaughter. Tell us what crypto coins the kids like.
She's going to say Dogecoin.
where was I? Oh, I was out. I was actually out in Delray Saturday night, like having a couple of beverages with my buddies. And we were talking to random people and like this group of girls. My buddy was talking to them. She said something about crypto. And he's like, oh, Mitch is the crypto guy, whatever. And she looks at me and she's like, what do you think of Doge? And I rolled my eyes and I walked away.
That's
I was
funny.
Like, this isn't going to work.
Maybe she was against it and you just blew your shot.
No, she was definitely a fan.
It's got a cute little doggy.
No, I mean, I obviously walked. I came back. I was just being dramatic.
All right. So can I join? Oh, I am in there. Okay.
So should I do like G, make it official, do the intro? Welcome back to the Leo Finance AMA.
He definitely doesn't lack energy. That's for sure.
My name is the Scaredy Cat, and I'm here with my hosts, Nick Spreadsheet and the Leo Lion, Mr. Cal. Yeah, you got to bring the energy. I don't know how he does it every time. I don't. I know the behind the scenes. There's times where he's just like completely dead. And then like he hits record and all of a sudden just got to turn it on.
Yeah. Bring the fire.
You got to do it. I mean, I'm sure Tony Robbins isn't always that energetic.
Right.
He's behind stage. Got to get himself pumped before he walks out there.
Snort a few lines. He's good to go.
I don't think that's how he does it. He does it a little more holistically with his little trampoline.
Organically. Yeah. His
little trampoline that he jumps on.
Oh, man.
So, just a little... little update before we go in the questions. I just released a Leo Finance post talking about HBD. So there's a lot of news, and I'm sure we'll get to it, about UST and Luna and how they were basically, I don't know if it's been confirmed yet or not, but most people were saying that essentially the system, the peg for UST was attacked. And I don't know if that's confirmed or not, that it was purposefully attacked, or if, you know, someone put on a big short position and saw that they could make a bunch of money. So I think it's kind of interesting to see, you know, how that unfolds. Obviously, let's see what it's trading at right now. It got all the way down to like 62 cents, I think I saw. UST's back up to 90 cents, so that's pretty good for them. Yeah, and Luna is down to $28. So if you don't know how the mechanics work, basically you can burn $1 worth of Luna to get one UST, and you can burn one UST to get $1 worth of Luna. So that algorithm is how UST maintains its peg. The thing is, there was like a coordinated dump on centralized exchanges where UST was dumped continuously and relentlessly. And that dump caused a lot of Luna to be obviously destroyed, or it caused the reverse. It caused a lot of UST to be converted into Luna. So we basically saw a cascading effect on the entire system. And then Do Kwon, the founder or co-founder of Terra, basically started moving that Bitcoin that he was buying. So he made big headlines for buying billions of dollars worth of Bitcoin to back UST. When it depegged, he took all that Bitcoin and started moving around. So I'm not exactly sure what they did with it. I heard something about loans or something to leverage that Bitcoin and try to maintain the peg. Luna's down to $28, which is down. Where was it right before this happened? It was around $80 before this started happening. So that's a pretty big drop. So if you think that UST is going to recover and the whole Terra ecosystem will recover, it's potentially a good play to buy some Luna. I bought some at $5 way back when, before it exploded, sold it over 100, which turned out to be pretty good. I wish I bought more, obviously. So I don't know. I've been thinking about buying some Luna down here. What do you think, Mitch?
Well, like I said earlier, I already tried to trade it and that didn't work out. So in theory, my answer is yes. In reality, we'll see if I have the capital to do that. But yeah, I mean, I feel like risk reward in terms of like asymmetrical risk, why would you not? I mean, thing was just at 80 and it's like, I don't know if we just got through the storm with it or if this is the eye of the storm. But it seems like the quote unquote run made its run, so to speak. And Luna has survived as of this moment.
Well, not just yet. So, you know, as long as UST is under the $1 peg, then the incentive is for people who hold UST to convert to Luna and sell the Luna because they get their dollar out. The problem, though, is that there's limits on how much you can do that per day, which is going to drag the whole thing out. I think somebody said it's 2.5 million Luna per day that you can mint that way. And so either, you know, all the people who want to get out have to get out, or the, you know, the peg has to continue going, or the USD has to continue going down in order to balance out those flows. So, you know, until, you know, I'm not a buyer of Luna for myself until I see USD getting back to $1. And I think that'll mark the bottom.
Makes sense.
Which brings me to
90 cents.
Yeah, it's getting there. You know, if they roll up and say, here's $4 billion and, you know, just to make everybody hold, then great. And, you know, back to the races. But if not, then it's going to have to be an organic process.
So with that said, even though the easy trade has already been missed in UST, with UST at 90 cents, would you buy UST at 90 cents now, basically on the bet that it gets back to a dollar for what should be an easy 10%?
I mean, I wouldn't, but a lot of people are.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I mean, like 62 cents, yes. Should have. Don't know why I didn't. I think I was just being greedy and got annoyed. It's not something that you can leverage trade. At least I was like, damn, I want to do a leverage long on UST. But, yep. So I'm sorry, I just saw an addicted his comment. HBD was 60 cents for months and people still didn't buy it.
Well, so this is a question. So now Polycup has the USDC PHBD pool. And Cal Leo Finance, the account, just put out a post, you know, what, 10 minutes ago, 20 minutes ago?
Yeah.
About, you know, all the stuff going on there. But HBD fundamentally works the same way as UST. It's a conversion mechanism. The conversions are different. It's 3.5 days versus instantaneous, which is kind of a break limiter on if people are trying to flee. There's also the haircut mechanic, which I don't know if UST has anything like that. I kind of doubt it. But so, you know, in light of all this, why HBD? Why is that still a goodbye?
Well, first of all, I think UST is going to recover from this, and I think potentially that it could use this as an opportunity to show that it's resilient and can sustain things, and even in the event of potentially a coordinated attack on the PEG, if that is what happened. And I think that they could implement things to prevent it or make it, you know, make their stablecoin more stable. So I think UST could have a nice recovery from this. And, you know, if you look at really any crypto, like any major project, they all had some sort of hack, some sort of attack at some point. And that is their turning point to either die or implement safeguards and show that they have the ability to be resilient. So I think this is Terra's moment, and it'll either die or it'll prove resiliency and gain its market share again. So with that in mind, I think HBD has already shown that it's resilient over the last, you know, 5 years that it's existed. It has depegged. It's gone to, you know, it's gone as low as, I don't remember, 60 cents or whatever. And it's gone as high as, you know, $8 or something at one point. I remember back in those Steam days when it went crazy high and we were all earning thousands of dollars on our posts and it was awesome. But obviously that's not what you want in a stable coin. You want it to be stable. So with all this being said, I think HBD is probably one of the most secure stable coins out there. In my opinion, you're taking a bet on the larger Hive ecosystem, which is like, you know, I remember when the whole, you know, the whole Justin Sun attack went down and we all realized that Hive, the Hive community is like a badger and you just can't kill it. It's like unkillable. So what I see happening is with this 20% interest rate, I think that HBD could gain mass adoption. I think this is kind of just the beginning. And nobody really cared about HBD up until recently with this 20% interest rate increase. We all just kind of looked at HBD as a way to earn post rewards and sell them into something else, you know, Hive or whatever you wanted to sell your HBD into. Now we all look at HBD as a bank account on chain where you can save and earn 20%. So there's actually this cool page that I got from DAOs, which shows you all sorts of information about HBD. So right now there's just to talk about the mechanics behind it, because I know everyone's curious now that this whole UST thing happened. There's a debt ceiling on HBD, which means that the market cap of HBD has to be below 10%, of the market cap of Hive. So Hive's market cap right now is 290 million. And HBD's market cap is 9 million. So that means that we're at about 3%. So HBD's market cap is 3% of the Hive market cap. And then Addicted saying in chat that that ceiling is getting pumped to 30%. So then the ceiling or the limit on how much HBD can be created goes up to 30% of the market cap of Hive. And I guess it would be interesting to see what happens as this fluctuates. Cause right now at 3%, we're kind of in this range where it's not really relevant right now. And the fact that there's only 9 million HBD out there is kind of wild.
Well, there's a bunch more in the fund, but it doesn't count towards the limits.
Right. So that's another important mechanic is that the Hive fund owns, I don't know how much it is, like 16 million or something, HBD. And that is not included in the market cap. And it also is excluded from the debt ceiling. So, you know, if that was included, obviously it would be the ceiling would look a lot different. But that is also slowly released into the circulation through the internal exchange. So there's like 130,000 or something a day that can be released, but not necessarily is. I'm just reading Addicted. So he's talking about the debt limit. So I guess the important question is for HBD, what happens when we reach, you know, if the Hive ecosystem was attacked in the same way that UST was, if it was like a coordinated thing, let's just say that Hive is dumped down to 10 cents and there is, you know, let's just say that there is 10% HBD out there. So the debt limit is at, or not the limit, but the debt is actually at 10%. What happens to HBD in that scenario?
Are you asking us, or was that a?
I'm asking. It's an open-ended question. I'm asking anybody because I think it's more of a thought experiment because nothing like that has ever really happened for.
Well, we've hit the haircut limits before, you know. So we do know HBD printing stops, so that people are. You know, the new inflation is assigned to Hive entirely rather than Hive and HBD. So that reduces the, you know, the exit demand for one thing. Because, you know, the death spiral is always like, okay, you have this some kind of collateral behind your stablecoin. The collateral is decreasing in value. So people exit the stablecoin to claim the collateral, sell the collateral down. It's now worth less. And then that feedback loop goes over and over again. So a 10% by limiting the total debt to 10% or 30%, as it's going to change, you know, you're never under normal circumstances, you're never in a situation where the collateral, it being Hive, is going to be less than the amount of debt, which is good. UST obviously did not have that limiter because, you know, the UST got up to 18 billion and it was like 18 billion, 600 million. And Luna was 18 billion 400 million. So the debt was actually greater than the underlying collateral. And that did not go so well. So so we know that the printing of HBD will stop. You know, will the people in that future state, you know, if Hive just dumps out of nowhere down to you know, reduce the collateral value, will they flee? Will they assume that things will be okay? You know, I don't know. I mean, we got guys like Addicted out here who are diehard, you know, Hive people. So, you know, there's definitely a component that won't run for the exits. But I don't know if that's going to be enough. But, you know, we have that 3.5 day conversion window, which, you know, does put the brakes on things.
Yeah. So I guess that begs the question then, do you think UST would have been better protected against what just happened if their debt limit was, let's say, 50% of the market cap of Luna?
Yeah, I think so. Because then you'd have to have a 50% dump before it becomes an issue.
Right.
Which
obviously which it happen. Saw. Yeah.
Well, which happened first, right? So, you know, from, you know, when I was watching it, it looked like the overall market was declining. So, you know, we saw, you know, 10%, 15% on lots of coins, you know, over the past 36, 48 hours. But at the same time, UST has been growing. So it's like, you know, a rising line met a falling line, and then they had problems. But if you had like a stable line and a falling line, you would have had a lot more buffer.
Why do I want to turn a rising line meta falling line into some kind of meme?
Make a t-shirt.
Chart with two squiggly lines.
Yeah. God, what is that?
Michael Saylor.
I think it is funny. Having some fun in chat. I think
this whole conversation about UST is just making me more bullish on HBD. I know some people are taking the opposite side of that, but
I think there's mechanics that would make me feel that way. And then there's also the other side of the coin where HBD will not be defended the way UST was,
but will
in my opinion. I mean, think about it. Like we don't have a billionaire with a war chest kind of behind it.
That is true.
Yeah.
And but, I mean, no offense, you could, like, you know, we could talk about anyone who might be a quote unquote loyalist. No one's a fucking loyalist. Like, I've seen that in, over the years in crypto, and like, and I know this from experience, because like, I've been a loyalist in a lot of ways and basically just lost money doing it. Like, any like true crypto head is not a loyalist. It, you know, they're not worth their salt. I mean, everyone I know that does well in crypto is going to make the move that makes the most financial sense or the best investment sense. You know, they can talk all they want about, you know, being on some, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, mission, so to speak, to defend something they believe in. But 9 out of 10 crypto heads are going to make the move that is financially beneficial. How do I win? How do I win the game? That's the mindset.
Addicted's going to die on this hill. But, you know,
I don't know if I believe that, addicted.
You know, in general, I think you are right, but I think an argument could be made that the people on Hive are not diehard crypto people, which is sort of part of its charm, you know, because it's marketed as a blogging community, right? So, you know, I'd be curious to see who the big holders are. I know somebody's got like 1 million HBD out of the 9 million. I forget who it was.
Damn. I'd like to know how they accumulated that.
I think it was, it's one of those like anonymous whales, right?
Yeah. I think Dells had some stats on it, or it might've been Tony. I'm not sure. But yeah, there's one account out there that has, you know, a giant amount of HBD, relatively speaking. But I don't know anything else about the account. So, you know, it's an open question, I think. You know, how people will react if it comes down to that. I think actually the debt limit does a lot to prevent the issues. There's overall. So, you know, while I was frozen and switching computers, did you guys talk about the post, the HBD post that you put out?
We talked a little bit about it. But yeah, basically what I was talking about was, you know, how this whole UST thing played out and the opportunity that I see for HBD to kind of take a foothold in this whole DeFi space. Cause we're all kind of looking for that stablecoin safe haven where you can earn a good yield, be confident in the stablecoin that's underpinning it. And kind of have like this, you know, you can have this big pool of crypto that you own, but then you also have this this stablecoin, you know, savings that you can leverage and you know, buy back into crypto and use for your daily expenses, and everyone's kind of looking for that in DeFi right now. So basically this post just kind of talked about that opportunity and why that opportunity really popped up when HBD's on-chain rate went to 20%, and then that opportunity got even bigger when this whole UST thing happened. Which is just showing us that the rise of UST and Luna was really because of the anchor 20% interest rate. So if this interest rate can be marketed correctly, just even assume that a fraction of the success that Luna saw from the UST adoption that it had comes over to HBD and Hive. And I mean, you could see Hive at $20, $30, $50, which would be nuts. Just think about, and you know, I mean, like Mitch was talking about, like who's going to die on their sword and defend the HBD price. Well, what if everyone on Hive that is already a diehard loyalist, like Addicted, who's sitting on, you know, maybe 250,000 Hive or something. What if their Hive goes up to $20 and you know, they're sitting on millions and tens of millions of dollars, and then they start migrating it into different things. And then if HBD loses its peg, now they're decamillionaires, and you've got a community of decamillionaires is probably better than one, potentially altruistic billionaire. So I do think that's interesting. I think the market dynamics of Hive and HPD are a lot more interesting than Terra and UST, just in my personal opinion. At the end of the post, I talked about PHPD. Obviously, I got to shill the PHPD. But essentially, I talked about how PHPD is as important for Polycub as it is for Hive, in my opinion. If you talk to any whales out there, they are all concerned with the on-ramp and off-ramp liquidity. So even with what just happened with Terra, there were plenty of people who said they were struggling to get their UST out. They were trying to get their UST out before it depegged. And you know, once there was that mad dash to do it, they all were struggling. You know, blockchains were getting basically held up in terms of gas fees, and you know, centralized exchanges were having issues. And like, that's the thing about crypto is when one thing moves, everything moves, and it's all a cascading failure. So, you know, on-ramp, off-ramp liquidity is probably one of the most important things that anyone's going to look at for really anything. But especially for a stablecoin, where the entire goal that they have for the stablecoin is security. They want to earn some sort of fixed interest at, you know, in a secure way. And that makes them even more sensitive to any sort of volatility. So in my opinion, PHPD is kind of that. You know, the first key piece was to raise the interest rate on chain to 20%. Then the second key piece now is to build liquidity pools on other blockchains that are basically just entrance portals into HPD. And then on the flip side, they also have that important function of being, you know, the exit portal out of HPD when you want to move it into something else. And then also, you know, there's like this third component, which is arbitrage, and you know, most centralized exchanges that have HPD, which I think is down to like 3 centralized exchanges, they like their HPD deposits and withdrawals continuously go down for no reason, you know, suspended. There's all sorts of manipulation on those centralized markets, and yeah, I think they're completely unreliable. I've tried to use Bittrex for HPD I don't even know how many times over the past 12 to 18 months, and it's like almost impossible to use.
Useless.
Useless. Wallet's so, down. Exactly. Wallet is down 90% of the time, and there's not really a reason for it.
It's because they
hate yeah. So what I see happening is we've got this PHPD pool, and the goal is to grow it. You know, it's about to hit 400K. If you actually watch the liquidity, it grows every single day, very slowly. You know, the float of HPD is only 9 million, and we've already captured what percentage of that? Dallas did a percentage, but I can do it really quick. We've already captured 2% of the total HPD out there in just about 3 weeks. So and that just keeps growing. So we're getting close to like 2.5%, and it'll just keep going up. And that's with the liquidity of $400,000 in the PHPD USDC pool. So what I want to see happen is my target by the end of May is to cross 500,000 in that PHPD USDC pool. And then I think because it's kind of accelerating if you watch what's happening. And what I see happening by the end of June is 750K in that pool. And then in July, we can target 1 million. And just kind of keep going from there. I mean, the goal from the beginning was to get $5 million in that PHPD pool, because I believe that is sufficient liquidity for bigger trades. So someone comes in and they want, you know, 100,000, 200,000 HPD at once, and they can buy that, and then the pool gets instantly arbed. I think it's a lot more interesting to look at HPD when you've got this one pool, and then when you've got the second pool that goes live, which is obviously going to be on Cub, that's going to get even more interesting for HPD itself. Then you've got the other component of you know, Polycub and Cub and how they benefit from it. So at the end of the post, I talked about, you know, the 4 value accrual mechanisms for PHPD on Polycub, which are wrapping fees. So the treasury earns from the wrapping fees. The on-chain savings rate from the Oracle held HBD, internal arbitrage, and then the governance utility, where if you're an HBD whale and you're pooling PHBD on the platform, you've got an incentive in the governance votes to keep voting up the yield in the PHBD vault. And then, you know, we're about to launch PSPS, and then you've got PHive that just launched last week. And, you know, there's going to be several more like PRune that launch. And then obviously all this governance utility just keeps adding up. And yeah, like Mitch is saying, you know, the V2 vaults, or you're saying on Cub too, but yeah, Polycub and Cub, the V2 vaults are absolute game changers, because they just generate massive value for the platform. And then that governance utility like amplifies that value, because now you've got massive utility for actually owning the native coin. And then when you create that value, it actually ends up creating more value, because if the price starts to go up, then the yields all go up, and then more capital flows in. And then there's more utility to keep driving those yields up. So I'm very excited about this V2 direction for Polycub. I think it's exactly what the platform needed to create more sustainability and grow the protocol and liquidity even higher. And then obviously we're using it as a framework to say, okay, this V2 system worked on Polycub. Now we're going to migrate that over to Cub. So I'm very excited to see how this goes. And I think it's already proving to go pretty well with, as soon as PHBD launched, you know, everything kind of changed, and we all saw, you know, this kind of sentiment flip on, you know, the way we viewed Polycub. And then with the launch of PHive, it's just kind of, I mean, it's only been a few days, so it's just kind of ramping up. And then with PSPS on the horizon, then we're just going to kind of see this. We're going to kind of see this all play out with the Polycub treasury earning thousands of dollars in revenue and driving all of that into the protocol.
Yeah. The liquidity is the issue though, right? So like I've been trying to buy HBD myself for the past, you know, week or so. At any given time, I can buy like $1,000 worth in order to get, you know, 1% slippage or less. Sometimes if somebody sold some and it's under like at 98 cents, then it can do a little bit more. But it's hard, right? So one issue with that is like Addicted is asking, is you know, if instead of a sushi swap pool, we do a curve pool, like a factory pool, then we'll have more liquidity around the $1 peg mark. Any thoughts on that or plans? Yeah.
So in the last AMA, Tony was putting a bunch of information in the chat, or maybe that was the AMA before that, I don't remember. Tony was putting a lot of information in chat about the factory pools and how they worked. And essentially what they do is they allow more trading around the peg they basically have a different algorithm that determines where liquidity is available. And when you set up the factory pool to be a stablecoin pool, it allocates more capital to that tighter wrap around $1. So obviously with a stablecoin, that's extremely important. The one issue with that is if HBD does depeg, then the pool will look a little different. But Tony did some math and said, you know, if HBD dropped to like, I don't remember what he said, but 60 cents, then actually the way that the curve algorithm works is that it actually goes back to the normal AMM algorithm. Oh yeah, he's saying 60 cents and $1.30, I think. Yeah, $1.30. So after those numbers, then it reaches those normal AMM equation figures. So I think that's interesting. I've been looking into Curve a little bit more, and I think that there's a decent potential that we'll migrate it over to Curve, which obviously entails a vault redeployment, which is a little bit of a pain, but it's not that bad. Plenty of platforms do that. PancakeSwap just had their massive V2 migration, or I think they're calling it V3 or something. So I think that's definitely possible. And like you said, you know, it would essentially make it so that, I don't remember, he said something about the math, but it would essentially make it like a $200,000 liquidity pool on Curve Factory would be equivalent to like a $2 million liquidity pool on SushiSwap, something like that, in terms of how much liquidity you have wrapped around those, you know, 98 to 102 prices.
Okay. I'll be right back, guys. I got a thing.
But yeah, I think, you know, I don't know, maybe someone in chat can confirm if there's a curve factory for BSC. I'm sure there is. So potentially what we're going to do is when we launch BHBD, we'll do a BHBD curve factory pool on Binance Smart Chain. And that'll kind of see, we can see how that goes. And then obviously we can migrate the PHBD pool if it goes well. So plenty of options. I think the key that we're seeing right now is that these V2 vaults and this multi, so what we've built is a multi-token bridge. And what we're doing with this is PHBD, PHive, PSPS, and all the other tokens that are about to follow are controlled by this Polycub DAO, which is deploying these vaults. And it's a radically reshaped version of what Polycub was before. And if you look at Cub, when we migrate all of this stuff to Cub, it's just a complete reshaping of how the platform works and where value comes in from. So kingdoms only accrue value from one method. And obviously this multi-token bridge and the vaults, the V2 vaults that are deployed from it, accrue value from five different methods. Outside of the PHBD-USDC vault, which accrues from four methods because it doesn't have that fifth one, which is being paired against Polycub. So I'm just extremely excited to see this kind of play out in a more heavy way. We're already seeing it flip in terms of value just from the PHBD and now the PHive vaults. And I think when we've got, you know, five or six of these vaults deployed, it's going to be even more obvious, you know, in terms of the value accrual and Polycub's price.
Well, that's what people want to hear. When number go up.
So
it's been up a bit.
It is up. Instead of soon, we can say that it's when you know five vaults are deployed.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to...
Tony's confirming that it's 10x, basically 10 times more liquidity, around 98 cents to a dollar or two. So, right. the current pool is 400K. And if we deployed it on Curve Factory, it would essentially be like a $4 million pool in terms of trading potential around the peg.
Right. And that has built into it $100,000 a day of defense to the stabilizer. Because, you know, that pool is going to be armed with the yep. internal market pools. So, yeah, I mean, that's attractive. I like it.
It is.
I would buy some. I'm trying to buy some. But it's just super slow as it is.
Yep.
And
this universe.
Yeah. So nobody got back to me on my idea, was it last week or the week before, to build an app to take USDC, convert it into Hive, buy from the stabilizer, and then send it back. But it'd be nice if any devs out there, people looking for projects.
Guess there's no devs listening. They're too busy devving.
Well, you know, when prices are down, that's when you hire devs because they're all they're all broke.
Wow. We just had a down day. We haven't had a down market. Oh, I guess technically we have, but we're not in a winter. That's when you get the devs.
I've seen a lot of talk about winter over the last few days.
Yeah.
Well, we just brought on two new devs in the past 7 days. So yeah, it's already proving to be a lot easier.
Yeah. So you need somebody who understands EVMs and or Solidity, I guess, and graphene to be able to build that app. But I think it's worth doing.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the fun thing about bear markets. Is that it's a lot easier to hire devs, a lot easier to do the things that we need to do. You know, what I was doing in the bull market was just building a sizable war chest so that in the bear market, we could onboard, a couple dozen more devs and just accelerate everything. So I've been excited about the bear market, which is why I'm not upset about markets going down. It's always nice when crypto's going up. I mean, traffic is higher, all that stuff, but Yeah, I mean, like Dix is saying, like a couple dozen devs. Yeah, I would love to, if I can find good devs, I would hire, you know, 30 plus more devs. It would be fun.
More devs equals sooner. Cub DeFi Vault 2s.
Exactly.
I'm gonna be leaving. Clearly, I'll be leading that win charge for that aspect. Clearly, we see where I'm biased, where my exposure is.
So when's the next V2 vault, Cal?
I would say PSPS will. I always say this week, but
Neil's excited.
I would say this week would be potential for the PSPS vault.
Potential. All right.
Let's say that it should be live with high certainty by next AMA.
Okay.
And that is the next V2 vault. So it's going to be PSPS-PolyCub. And then, you know, the goal is to kind of deploy a new V2 vault every 10 days or so.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly an SPS whale, so I could, you know, it'd be nice to have some additional yield, because, you know, the competition inside Splinterlands for SPS yield is intense. Yields have gone way down. They're still not terrible, because you're getting, well, it doesn't really matter for this audience, but you get SPS yield and you get voucher yield. So when you combine the two, it's like, I don't know, 60%, something like that. 50% maybe now. But it's dropping because more and more people stake. And I mean, that was like 180% a few months ago. But yeah, like everything else, SPS got whacked yesterday. I bought some at 7 cents, which was a good buy, it turns out.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. They do, I was looking at the BSC trading volume over the last 24 hours. It was 2.2 million, which is wild.
Yeah, it was a small, small piece of that. I only started legging in because I thought we'd continue going down. But, you know, we'll see. We get a little bit of a rally here today in Bitcoin, which, you know, leads all the rest of the markets. So Kat, what do you think? Is 30K going to hold? It cracked a little bit already.
Me and Addicted were just talking about that in chat. And honestly, I think it's a short-term bottom. I mean, I don't, it cracking 30K, I'd even like sneeze at, because my whole thing was like 29, 30 is the level. Like, so I expected to see, you know, 29 and change. I was hoping we'd see more of a capitulation type bounce. I also would have liked to buy some there. I did do some buying. I was a little early to the game. I bought like 33 and change, but on the daily chart, everything screams short-term bottom. The weekly and monthlies don't look great though, but I'm pretty comfortable with the guess that Bitcoin holds this 29.30 for at least a little while. I mean, I don't see us, unless, you know, obviously anything can happen. We can get another just huge volume sell-off today, but I think it's a short-term bottom. I don't see us going lower for at least a few weeks if we're gonna. It's everything's so oversold on the Bitcoin chart. Like every single indicator is oversold. And, you know, it just bounced right off that level pretty clean. Volume was up, you know, obviously it wasn't like a real capitulation type bounce with like a huge wick or anything like that, but it might have just been the timing when the candle closed, you know what I mean? Because we got that kind of just rip right. It's like candle closed, and then we got to rip straight up. So if it would have happened an hour earlier.
So I think this confirms my thesis, actually. So I've been saying for a long time that, you know, with the institutional traders now involved in crypto, that when they get margin calls in the stocks and equities or stocks and bond markets, then they sell their crypto and, you know, in order to fund margin. So like we saw, like when Netflix had their dump, you know, on their earnings call, you know, crypto dumped like within minutes afterwards. So what we saw yesterday was that, you know, stock market's going down, stock market's down, what, 3%, 4% yesterday. And then crypto's down, you know, 10 to 15%, depending on which coin you're looking at. And then at four o'clock, when the US markets close, Bitcoin just turned right around and started going back up. So I think that is confirmation that those institutional traders stopped selling because the markets closed. And then all the crypto buyers were able to get their bids in and were pushing prices up. So
that thesis makes a lot of sense. Yeah. I'm sure you've said it before, but this is the first time it's registering in my brain. And
I've said it before, I promise.
Yeah. Right then I'm just like, that makes a lot of sense. And it's funny too, because you know, I've talked about that where I'm like, crypto is tied to the stock market. I don't know exactly how. I just figured because it's a risk asset and it's like capital inflows, capital outflows. You gave an example, a clear example of what those catalysts are for the inflows and outflows. So that's why I still am under this belief that we're going to need a bear market in crypto and stocks before we get a decoupling, so to speak, of crypto. And it's going to be because everything you just talked about, all that's going to get exhausted. So yes. Now you're not going to have that attachment anymore. And then people are just going to be like, you know what? I'm going crypto.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, the institutional holders only have so much, whatever that number is, and that will eventually be sold.
That is interesting. So, yeah, I mean, with that said, then that means we should continue to see downward pressure on crypto because the stock market's getting wrecked again today. I expect the stock market to behave very poorly over the next 3 to 6 months.
I think
it kind of goes back to what we were saying last year. It's just like, all right, Fed's going to start raising, shit's going to start falling apart. It's going to suck. And then come September, they're going to be like, sorry, we messed up. And they're going to start cutting and turning the printer back on.
You know, the reaction has been so bad. I don't think we get to September. I think we get to like June, July.
You know? But then you still have the problem of inflation. So yeah, which seems to be right now the more important concern. So it will be, what's the popular concern? So in 3 months, will inflation still be the popular concern? It has to be, because inflation is going to inflation wrecks everybody.
Well, it does. But, you know, who has the ears of the guys at the Fed? You know,
the guys that aren't going to get reelected. I'm just saying that right now. I just don't see how it's happening. But
yeah. Well, you know, that's what the whole the Supreme Court leak was about. It's trying to gin up the base to come vote in November.
Yep. Anything they can do. They don't have COVID to use anymore.
That's true.
Unless we get another strand 57.
Yeah. Well, the FDA was out yesterday, the day before, saying that we'd have to now treat this like the same way we treat the flu. It's just, it's going to be around. There's gonna be a new strain every year, you know. So
the shit that most people were thinking 2 years ago.
Yeah.
That's wild.
I still recommend not getting COVID. I had Delta. That sucked.
I don't even know which one I had. I just know it literally kicked my ass and I'm still not the same.
Yeah.
I swear I still have brain fog. It's been a year since I had it. Yeah. I was sick for like 3 months.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
And so I mean, obviously the strains that are going around now are less, make people less sick, which is great. But, you know, if you can avoid it, I'd say avoid it.
Yeah, it's a crapshoot. Everyone gets a different experience. I know people that felt sick for one day and they were fine. And then I know people like me who got just wrecked.
Yeah.
My COVID experience was the equivalent to anyone who was bought Luna at $80.
We bought Tails bags. So the Fed's going to keep raising rates until the screaming intensifies to the point where they can't ignore it anymore, right? So when does the stock market screaming balance out with people screaming about inflation?
I think we still have a long ways to go down.
I don't think it's that long.
Dude,
we're at what are we at, 0.75% right now? I don't think we get to 2.
I probably agree with that, but I just think, well, all right. So let's say they raise another half in mid-June, right?
Uh-huh.
So where does that get us to? One and a quarter? Where I forgot.
The meetings will continue until morale improves. That's exactly right. So let's see.
And then when do they meet again after June? August or September?
I think July. You know, it's a weird schedule. It's like 10 times a year.
Okay. That's more often than I I thought. Yeah, so I mean, basically in the next 3 months, they can technically raise a full percent if they do half points every time, which they may not, but let's just say they do. So that gets us where? I guess it's like 175. If they do two more 50-point raises.
Yeah, just looking at the calendar here. So we just had May. So yeah, there's a June, a July, and then a September for the next 3 years.
So it kind of goes back to, I think September is going to be the make or break. I do not see them not raising in June and July. And then that gives them, you get that bigger gap with that like one and a half months. And then that's when it's going to be like, all right, what's going on? Are we effed? Are they going to back off? Plus, what is that? Is it midterm elections or this November?
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Perfect timing. Fed's going to get pressured to ease off in September so things can get an upswing for a couple months so people can get reelected.
Yep. All right. I buy that.
So I'm sticking with my September thesis.
So Mitch's official take is that rates are lowered in September.
I don't know if they're going to be lowered, but they're going to back off on what they're doing in September for sure. Yeah. Well, I should say for sure, but it depends. I mean, obviously, the stock market could turn around and start going up. I don't know.
The QT, the quantitative tightening.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta be honest with you. I was disappointed we didn't get more of a bounce off of the last Fed meeting because everything was baked in. People were happy with what they said because they said, like, you know, 75 basis point really ain't going to happen. I mean, they didn't say it won't, but they lean towards it.
It's a not actively considered.
Exactly, which is them saying. So anyway, I thought we were going to bounce, like, you know, we got the big one candle rally, and I thought we were going to see the S&P get to like 4,400. And if it did, I was going to short the shit out of it there. I was going to put on my first trade on the S&P in like over a year. And we just got a one-day bounce, and that was it. And down we went. I'm like, that sucked because kind of did what I expected, but I just thought we'd get more of a bounce. And now we've just blown through everything into, you know, we're already in the danger zone. We got under four. It's under 4,000 right now. So again, I'm sure we'll get a relief bounce at some point. At this point, where does it go? I don't know. I might just test that former support there, like 4,150 and change. So
yeah, so easy. Nifty Phil is going to start a new cryptocurrency based on chicken tendies.
Great idea. That shit will go like wildfire. That'll be more popular than Shiba Inu.
Yeah. That's probably worth doing. better than Lassie Cash.
Well, if you make one of them, one chicken tendy, redeemable for one actual chicken tender, it would go up in value.
Hey, you know, backyard,
go up against the dollar at least.
Bored Apes has a restaurant now, so.
They do.
Do they really?
Yeah, they get the burger restaurant in L.A.
Yeah.
That's the first I've heard of it.
Yeah, it was like a pop-up.
Talk about sign of the top, you know?
You know what? Valid point, which is weird because it's like, how is this a top when we've been down for a couple months? Like,
well, it was an NFT top.
Yeah, most awkward top ever.
Yeah. I was actually talking to a guy who has run a really good project on Binance Smart Chain. And there's this game that I've been wanting to build forever. It's, you know, an NFT type game. And I was talking to him, I was like, well, you know, so I had this idea, kicking around with Gerber and stuff. But you know, just, I can't see doing it in this market. I don't see how that would work, you know, because people are definitely on defense after the last few days.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, now's the time to build it, have it ready.
Yeah,
that is a valid point.
But at the same time, you know, I do want, you know, I don't want to sink a whole bunch of money into it. I'd rather have it, you know, bootstrapped through, you know, an initial sale and, you know, have that fun development. So we don't all have Cal's kind of deep pockets.
Exactly. Pocket. I got some lint in my pockets right now. Speaking of things being added,
it's better than the people on Luna who've got holes in their pockets.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I had zero exposure. You know, I started trying to do that one little trade. I have zero exposure to UST and Luna, which is funny because, you know, I was considering doing that, you know, moving some into USD stable and kind of glad I didn't. So at least that was a win for being lazy. But In other news, as far as filling pockets, I'm going to assume the Polycub airdrop is officially finished, or I was actually surprised when I saw I had coins yesterday. I was like, sweet.
Yeah, it's the snapshots are done. So, yeah, some people have still been claiming, and yeah, but there's still some claims out there. So,
oh, I'm sure. I'm sure there's people that haven't claimed that have, you know, accumulated a stack.
Do you have a date? When was the last official day of the airdrop?
Last snapshot.
I think it was the 8th, 7th, or something around there, 7th or 8th. Okay. It was right around the halvening. So the other thing is I didn't put up a post about the halvening, but I've got one ready. I've got to deploy that because the halvening already went through. So we're at, officially, we are at 0.5 polycup per block.
Nice.
And have the APYs updated? I know that was a thing.
Yeah, so the APYs got a little wonky right when it went through, but they're up to date now. So all the APYs you see right now are accurate for 0.5 polycup per block.
Okay. And it's we're on month over month schedule now, right?
Yep, every month it auto happens. So, yep.
Okay. Nice.
That's wild.
Yeah, and the yields are still very good, and part of that has to do with the Polycub price recently. So, you know, you can only, and Polycub's price, that has to do with Polycub's price, you know, week over week. But if you look at, you know, month over month, Polycub is not doing great, and the yields are still amazing. So you can only imagine that with all these V2 vaults and all this, you know, these five value accrual mechanisms kind of all playing together, and you know, you take one vault and you say, okay, it's got five value accrual mechanisms, and then you launch six of those, and then you got 5x6, and it's like exponential value accrual into Polycub. And that's kind of the whole idea behind it, is that you've got all this value accruing into Polycub, and then you've got the governance utility. And all of this is just pushing Polycub forward, and then it's pushing yields up. And then you've got more liquidity being pushed in. And then every month you've got the halvening. So there's less Polycub being distributed, but the price keeps going up. So yields hopefully stay pretty stable for a long time. And then obviously they'll kind of come down to a certain level. Like right now we're seeing, you know, over 100% APR on some of these Polycub pools like PHIVE, USDC, and WEATH. You know, if the Polycub price just keeps going up sustainably, then these yields will continue. Because it's all obviously, you know, in dollars. And it's, you know, some people question if that's possible. And I actually think it's very possible with all of this utility built in. Nifty Phil is saying, still mind-blowing that the PHBD USDC pool only has 389,000 when it's 47% APY.
Because I can't buy it.
Yeah. One thing is that it's so hard to buy, but you gotta find a way. You gotta buy some HBD on chain, wrap it, get some liquidity in there.
Yeah, but I don't want to pay 5% to
well, you can buy it on the internal market, get it at like
I know, but then, you know, I've got to buy Hive. There's slippage there. Then there's the Hive to HBD thing. Hive's been up and down all over the place for the last few days. You know, yeah. I could easily eat up 5%.
You know? I did buy some yesterday. It goes both ways, right? But it is annoying. And that was part of the thing that I put in that post, why PHBD is so important. Because I was talking to some big people on Hive, you know, some of the big witnesses and stakeholders, and they said, you know, they don't really see the value of PHBD because the internal market, you know, has over $100,000 in HBD available every day at only a 1% premium. And I said, well, that's not the real story. The real story is twofold. One is user experience, and the internal market is a horrible user experience, which I think could be radically improved just with some UI improvements. The second is that the price volatility of Hive makes buying on the internal market very unpredictable in both ways. So that, you know, I bought yesterday knowing how the mechanics work, and I was able to make a couple percent on the HBD and Hive conversions. But, you know, a whale stepping in from DeFi, they're in stable coins because they want stability. They want reliability. They don't want to play with market dynamics to try to get stable coins in and out of the system.
Yeah.
So that's the value prop of PHBD, is that they go to, you know, Paraswap, they enter $10,000 worth of USDC going into PHBD, and they know exactly what price they're going to get. So that reliability is what we need for HBD, and PHBD brings that to the table. And it brings it to the table with a lot of APR attached so that, you know, we can seed that liquidity.
Yep. I'm with you.
I'm sorry. I'm still gathering myself after the comment about talking to the Hive witnesses and their responses. Just, I don't even, I feel like a guy that's got a bad ex-girlfriend that he keeps going back to. That's what basically Steam and Hive have felt like for the last 6 years. Anyway, I saw that there was, wow, chat just kept moving. I saw MyFreeBTC said we need a live protocol liquidity page. I'm going to piggyback on top of that because that's a UI type thing and say when locked Polycub UI unlocked countdown thing.
I got an even better one. So how about you just tell us what the address is, at least of the Polygon wallet of the protocol of liquidity, and then you can get to building the thing on your own time.
That also
works. I have thought about we can just push out the address and you know push out the protocol and liquidity address. We may do that, but I mean the protocol own liquidity live tracking page is so a lot of these features for Polycub, including you know bonding, lending, governance, protocol and liquidity, all this stuff was built but not polished. So that liquidity page is built but not polished. So you know, ideally I would like to wait to push it live, but we can just put out the address and let people track it there.
I'm gonna speak for everybody in the community that says we don't care about polish. Get it out and iterate, you know.
Yeah, well, that's typically what we do. I mean, you look at the UI now, even so, then to lead that right into Mitch's win, you know, the we're working on the unlock timer, so you can see, but you can go to the contracts and read the timer. Obviously that just requires you know, some legwork to go to the contract and read it,
and we talked about that on last week's call, and it was obviously, I guess, more difficult for the, you know, from most people than might be worth the time. But if someone wants to go down the rabbit hole, I mean, listen, all my questions, you know, come with a motivation. So like the reason I'm curious about that is because like, all right, when do I have some Polycup unlocking? Because I just had a power down free up on Hive. So now I have liquid Hive that I want to put into P Hive, right? But I need Polycub. And it's like, all right, great. I don't have any Polycub. At least that's, you know, liquid, everything's staked. I don't want to take it out of existing pools. Yeah, I could go buy some, but it's kind of annoying when I have a shit ton just sitting there locked in a wallet. So as soon as enough becomes available of my Polycub, that's immediately getting paired with P Hive going into that new pool. So that's like why I ask, you know, so I can get my damn money in.
I think someone was it Nifty Phil? Someone said that last AMA that they were going to make a guide for how to see when your next unlock claim was going to be through the contract.
Yes.
I mean, I could make a guide for it too, but
I think I bribed with upvotes from me and my trail on who does the guide. But yeah, because I mean, case in point, I have a rough guess that I have some freeing up in the next few days, but I don't know that for sure. So it's like, if I see I have 2 weeks to wait, screw it. I'm going to go procure some Polycub somehow and then get my P Hive working instead of sitting there. If it's 2 days, then it makes sense for me to just wait. But either way, I want to get my Hive working.
Yeah, we need more P Hive in that pool, by the way.
Ooh, that's so. A tempting and dangerous offer from Addicted. I don't know if I want Addicted to know my Addy. I shall forever be stalked. You might, if Addicted has my Addy, he can see everything I've done and then lose complete respect for me as an investor. It's not been a good year for the cat. Some poor decisions were made. Too much loyalty.
Here, Mitch, put yours in the Zoom chat. I'll check for you without sharing it.
I love it. That works a lot better. No offense, Addicted.
You just don't trust Addicted.
No, I do. in theory, Cal already knows, has seen my address in the past.
Yeah, I have ways to procure it if I wanted to.
There are ways and ways.
Generally, no. I mean, oh, so I have a question. You know how like people, you know, look at the rich list for ex-poly?
Yeah.
I'm curious about the rich list, like the rich list for Cub. Is it the same thing? Is it like simple as like pulling up a specific token addy?
Not exactly.
Or is it different because it's not the ex-poly type thing?
Right. Yeah, it's not exactly the same because of the way that ex-poly Cub works. It's actually a token that represents your position in ex-poly Cub, whereas the Cub Kingdom, you're actually depositing into a smart contract.
Gotcha. I figured,
which is, yeah,
I thought
they're both smart contracts, but one smart contract gives you like a redeemable token, which is ex-poly Cub. The other doesn't give you a redeemable token.
Yeah. And you can look at that. I was just curious. I want to see where I stand. I want to beat my chest, be the winner of something. I got my war chest of Cub.
Well, you've got zero unlocked now.
Yeah, that makes sense. I just feel like some of it might be close, but I could be wrong. I could still be weeks out because I didn't harvest for a while like a dumbass. When I stopped taking the penalty, I also stopped harvesting for a while, which was dumb. It's like, get it in the damn locked wall. So I was counting down because I was taking the penalty, I think, first 30 days. At least. Which made sense with X-Poly.
Yeah.
X-Poly played out kind of the way. I don't know. I think, Neil, I think you kind of had the same idea. Because I remember talking to Walter and Mike about it. I'm like, listen, that ratio is going to keep moving. And I think it's going to get up to 20 relatively fast. It's going to slow down, obviously, as we get into the, you know, the higher teens. I was like, but once it gets to 20, I feel like it's going to be a slow grind after 20. And that's generally what it's been, which makes sense. The easy money was early.
Well, you know, there's the two ways ex-poly Cub grows. One is that it gets a share of the just core inflation. And then the other is that it gets, you know, the penalty fees from people harvesting early. So since the inflation is now, you know, 0.5 per block, down from, you know, it started off at 5, so that's 5 times or 10 times the rate. Then just the numerical inputs into ex-poly have gone down a lot. So I had the same kind of thought. You know, I was in ex-poly from the beginning, from like 1.08 up to 20, and then I moved from ex-poly into Polycub Weath and making my, you know, 100% there and riding that volatility wave between Ethereum and Polycub. So, you know, and getting the trading fees, you know, inside of the LP.
Yeah.
So that's what I've done. You know, it works for me.
I just stacked X-Poly until I think the last time I added to it was
addicted to stocking.
Predicted is stalking.
Yeah, I've got, so you've only got 4 days left, Mitch.
Okay, sweet. At least for some of it.
Tony's
got me hooked up too. What is that one? Oh, it's about 5 days. Yeah, so 4 days essentially.
Yep.
The question is how much? Will that be enough for your P-Hive?
True. My recommendation is to buy more Polycub and pool it against that.
Shocking. You should buy more Polycub soon.
Soon. Yeah, very soon.
I might do that.
Should upgrade that soon to now.
Damn, where's my moderator abilities in the AMA chat? I need to delete some messages. I'm just getting done dirty.
Yep, that's the thing about blockchains.
There ain't no secrets unless you're on a XMR no chain.
Secrets on the chain.
So I like Sally's question here about how about buying some Cub. Well, I would, but I already have like 250,000 Cub tokens that I've ridden down to oblivion. So I might buy more to dollar cost average. But yeah. Yes, I think everyone should buy more Cub. That's a great idea. It's the next one that's going to pop. V2 vaults are coming. Beehive, BHVD. It's in the Sooniverse.
This V2, you know, in all seriousness, this V2 change is going to be pretty wild for Polycub. And then obviously we're just going to take that over to Cub. So if you are in the game of timing things, then I would be.
But Cub is on fire sale discount right now. You should definitely buy. I'm not even like being facetious. Like I'm being serious. Like it's, not really going to be able to get it cheaper than this.
Well, so the question is that, you know, when will the soons become now, right? Because the value
always the question.
The core of that proposal is that, you know, the V2 vaults, when deployed to Cub, will, you know, generate value for the Cub token and raise prices, right? Because yeah, I mean, market cap might be whatever it is, but you know, your token total is really what matters to you as an individual trader. So, you know, you could buy now and still ride the grind until the V2 is deployed, or you can try to time it a little bit narrower and try to get in much closer to when those vaults are deployed. So, you know.
That sounds risky, Neil. I think people should just buy now and play it safe.
It does lock you in. Or, I mean, nothing's locked, but yeah. It's,
when Avalanche Cub, Cat needs another airdrop already.
V2 vaults are going to be pretty crazy.
That's interesting. Nifty Phil, when Cub Polycub pool though?
Just some cross chain.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah, no reason you couldn't.
You could. I don't know what the value add is, but I'm sure there is one.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, the value add is governance migration. So if you are voting in, actually that might be an actual vector of exploit. So let's say, you know, in the future there's X Polycub voting on inflation distribution, and then there's X Polycub, or then there's X Cub voting on inflation on Cub DeFi. And if you're migrating back and forth, you know, depending on how often the votes are, you might be able to double dip.
I actually like that a lot, since that would give me way more influence by my like essentially migrating, since yeah. I'm a bigger whale on Cub. See, Neil, this is why we pay you the big bucks.
Oh yeah, all that $0.
Yes, it's awesome. I enjoy that $0. Marco said something about Leo, and it got me thinking about. Leo and Burns. I saw someone talk about that maybe general a while back. What is actually, and that holds true for Cub as well. So what's going on in terms of Burns with Leo and Cub? Are they happening? Have they been happening? Cub specifically, but also Leo.
Yeah. So with Cub Burns, just to start there, the management fee on Kingdoms. So with Polycub, the management fee on Kingdoms goes to protocol and liquidity. With Cub, the management fee is automatically buying Cub every single day and burning it from the auto compounding Kingdoms. With the V2 migration, first on Polycub, we're seeing, you know, the amount of value that's being accrued from the PHBD vault, as an example, since that one's been up for 3 weeks, is outweighing the height of Kingdoms on Polycub when it had, you know, $5-6 million in TVL. So it's pretty, and it's outweighing it by a multiple. So it's pretty amazing to see how that's working, which is why this whole V2 direction was taken, and why, you know, we're kind of reshaping the platform completely. So if you look at Cub right now, it's got the same thing where the management fees are actually just burning Cub, but it's just that one value accrual mechanism, which is actually pretty low. When we start deploying the V2 vaults on Cub, you're going to see that completely reshape and take a new direction, just like it did and is doing actively right now on Polycub. You know, we've only really got two of these V2 vaults out. So obviously once we hit a critical mass of how many V2 vaults we've got on Polycub, then we'll start the full scale migration onto Cub. And with that, you know, you're going to see a lot of things like governance and everything. But burning is going to be kind of, you know, the interesting thing about burning is that it has value, but the value, the question of where value should go, I think is more interesting when you start looking at things like, you know, redistribution and protocol and liquidity. So I do think that protocol and liquidity is a more beneficial thing than just burning Cub off the market. But obviously that also could be put to governance votes, you know, through XCup governance and yeah, that could get interesting. And then in terms of Leo, so Marco's question about Leo ads ties directly into your question about Leo burns, which is that we used to use ad revenue to burn Leo. And instead we've been building up that ad revenue for a new feature. And we put out a post a couple weeks ago talking about it. It is basically a feature where the ad revenue is paid out. So the ad revenue is all paid out in Bitcoin, and it always has been. That Bitcoin is being pooled right now. And then it is going to be used when this feature goes live to it'll automatically buy Leo and then distribute it into basically a fixed rewards pool where it pays interest to anyone who's got Leo power staked. So it basically buys Leo on the market. And then if you've got Leo power staked, it just adds Leo power to your balance autonomously. So then you're essentially, if you got 1,000 Leo power, after a year, you might have, you know, 1,100 Leo power if the APR is 10% from that mechanism. And that's outside of curation, outside of content creation and LPs. That's just kind of its own thing. And Marco was asking when that goes live. Soon would be the official response. And in the Sooniverse. But I'm excited too about that Leo ads feature. I think it transforms the platform in terms of the way that people use Leo Finance and view the growth of it. So if you're a Leo Power stakeholder, you already have a big incentive to grow the platform because you hold Leo. But when you've got this Leo ads mechanism, it'll be very clear to see that, okay, I wrote, you know, three posts this month and one generated 10 times more traffic than the others. So, you know, let's say that Leo Finance traffic was doing better this week than this week. Let me do more of the thing that generated more traffic, because now my Leo power balance is growing even more because of the Leo ad revenue. And, you know, if you get 1,000 people cooperating in the same direction, saying, if I write evergreen content and I share it on social media and I generate traffic for Leo Finance, then I generate more Leo ads revenue, which then buys more Leo, which props the price up, and then also distributes that Leo to my Leo power balance. It's just kind of this more circular, I'd say right now we've got, you know, like a half circle in terms of, you know, Leo Finance, you know, value distribution. And when you've got this Leo ads mechanism in place, it kind of closes that loop. And I think it's going to make using the platform a lot more fun and a lot more, you know, self-fulfilling in terms of growth.
Right on. Speaking of growth, you know, the crypto market is crazy because we have a full crowd here at the weekly AMA. This is actually probably the most people we've had in a while. So
yeah.
Just this wanted to acknowledge.
In the last 24 hours.
Yeah, I wanted to acknowledge the audience. I see a lot of old names. Yeah, rounds of applause for the audience. Some old names, some new names, some people I haven't seen in a while. Pretty cool. So hopefully we're answering your questions, and hopefully one of the occasional ridiculous things I say gives you a laugh. And then if you want smart stuff, talk to Mixed Spreadsheet.
So, Cal, not to give you another project or anything, but is there any officially owned Polycub or Cub that is held by Leo Finance, the blogging platform? So, I mean, obviously you have your own stuff, and like everybody who's on Leo has their own stuff. But as far as like owned by Leo Finance in order to accrue value back into Leo.
No, not for that. So what is your project idea?
Well, my project idea is that somebody, or not somebody, so a user could stake their Leo into some kind of contract, and that Leo goes out and then buys, you know, yielding assets under the Leo Finance management, I guess. And obviously it would go on to Cub DeFi or Polygon and bring that yield home and buy up Leo and, you know, send it back to the user. So it would, yeah, be like, it would have to be like a long-term vault type of thing. So
yeah. Addicted is saying you're basically dumping Leo into other assets to generate yield and then bring it back into Leo, which long term could be beneficial. There's an idea I have for a single stake Leo vault that would be directly on the Leo Finance UI. And I actually got this idea. Mitch and I talked to some VCs, I don't remember when, a few months ago, when Polycub launched. And one thing they said is that it was confusing. Buying Leo and staking it is kind of confusing. There's so many different places you can do it. And that kind of gave me this idea. I wrote it down at the time for this single stake Leo vault, where anyone on the platform on leofinance.io could click a button in their wallet and say stake Leo into liquidity pools, or, you know, something along those lines, you know, DeFi Leo or whatever, something different than staking Leo power. And basically what it would do is it's a vault where they deposit their Leo. It gets sent to an Oracle account on Hive, just like BLeo, PLeo, those Oracle accounts. It gets sent to this designated Oracle account, and that Oracle account is controlled by a smart contract with that, which then takes that Leo and sends it to Binance Smart Chain or Polygon or Avalanche or any other chain, Thor chain, where Leo exists, and there's a liquidity pool for it. And then it pools that Leo asymmetrically into those pools. So obviously it is selling half to asymmetrically pool. But then it's creating a liquidity pool position on all these different places. And basically that Oracle account controls all these different liquidity pools. So it's sending liquidity to each blockchain and building liquidity on every chain. And to the user, and this is all about user experience, because you can do this right now, but you have to do it yourself. You can send Leo to any chain that you want. But what this is doing is simplifying that experience and saying, just click here, deposit Leo. Now you're in a vault and it's paying you a certain amount of yield. And then obviously the Oracle will have its management fee on that yield that it brings back. The core piece of that, which I would like to launch before we do this, is Leo Bridge. So we've got a dev building Leo Bridge right now. Obviously it's a little more complex than the current Leo Bridge, and it's a lot more functional. But this is what it looks like. And when this Leo Bridge goes live, it's going to become even more important to have, I mean, the whole idea for this branch out is Leo Bridge. Leo Bridge is still the center of all of this, where you can do these cross-chain permissionless swaps, and it all goes through the Leo economy, and it all goes through, you know, Wrap Leo, B Leo, P Leo, A Leo, Thorchain Leo, and having this Leo Bridge at the center, connecting everything together, Cub, Polycub, Leo, everything's connected by Leo Bridge. And I'm coming up with different ideas for this vault, but it's like a one Leo vault, where you tell anybody who doesn't want to get involved in DeFi, click this button, it stakes your Leo, and it pays you this yield, and it just shows the yield. And it says, you know, it's paying you 30% APR on your Leo. And it's, you know, it can have even a description if you want to say that it's pooling it out on different extensions of Leo Bridge. So what you're doing is seeding the liquidity for Leo Bridge to allow bigger swaps, which obviously feeds more into the Leo economy, and then you're generating real revenue for the Leo ecosystem. So while I do like the idea of taking Leo and building a treasury and deploying it and earning external yield, I think it's a bigger idea, you know, harder to tackle, but something that if we pull it off, it would radically change the way that Leo, you know, accrues value. And that is to basically build out this Leo Bridge economy where, you know, anyone can swap anything to any blockchain, and it all goes through Leo. And then all the trading fees, the APR, The management fees are all accrued in value back into Leo and all the Leo holders. So I think that's kind of been my vision of the future. Even this is basically what I thought of right before Cub launched, that I wanted to do. And you know, it's been a slow grind to get it to where it's at now. And I think, you know, in the next couple of months, it'll look a lot different.
Yeah, I like it. You know, so like if I'm adding 1,000 Leo and staking it into this LP contract thing, I would think that it would just assign that Leo to the liquidity pool on the bridge that has the least liquidity, just to bump up, you know, wherever it needs it, and then, you know, iterate with every additional deposit. I like it.
Push liquidity to where it's needed, but then the user experience is extremely simplified.
Yeah, one button is nice.
Yeah.
Let's see. Longboard is saying, my suggestion would be buying a few Enigma Economy NFTs and putting those in a vault.
When point and click.
They are decentralized mining operations that just use the NFT thing as a crowdfunder. By holding the NFTs, you get a portion of the mining hash rate, thus study passive crypto in. Passive income. Genesis collection will also scale indefinitely with the mining operation. So, you know, shared mining. It's not a terrible idea.
Crowdfund everything.
Well, you know, the launches as bootstrapping crowdfunding is, you know, let's be honest, a lot of people just do it and then disappear, never deliver on their promises. But it's a great way to raise capital for a project.
Indeed.
Keep you updated if I get rugged. It doesn't even need to be a rug. It's just, you know, projects just kind of lose interest and die.
Very true. What is this?
Oh, we lost Cal.
We lost Cal. We just get, there's the rug. We just get, the rug has happened.
Oh, knows. All right. So what should we talk about without Cal? I'm sure he'll be back in a few minutes. Oh, there he is. He's back.
Welcome back.
Zoom decided to crash on me.
Yeah, the recording stopped as well, which I thought was interesting.
And then it kicked right off when you came in.
Yeah, I wonder if we're going to get two recordings or I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully if they fix that.
Get the big one.
Interesting.
Did it reset the live stream?
It says live. I don't know.
I'm not sure. Interesting. Oh. I just saw one of Dal's shorts post. How is HVD different than UST?
Oh, yeah. I saw that
this morning.
I got to check that one out.
I think the summary of today is we need more HPD.
Right? We do.
Indeed.
When more HPD.
So I've been looking at the transactions as I've been buying for the last little while, and I've gotten sandwiched on every single transaction. And it's for like ridiculously small amounts. But it's so, you know, for those who don't know, a sandwich attack is when you put in an order and then a bot is scanning the memory pool on the blockchain. It sees my order. They say, oh, I'm going to jump in ahead of you by paying more gas, and I'm going to raise the price of the pool. You're going to buy, you're going to raise it more, and then I'm going to sell, and I'm going to reap a small profit. And the profit comes from me, you know, from paying a higher price than I otherwise would have paid.
And if they take $2 every single time from Neil, that adds up.
It does. And it's so I was talking about it in the Discord the other night, and they were saying, it's like, well, my slippage is too high. I had my slippage set at 0.5%, which is kind of the standard on SushiSwap. And I was like, okay, that's true. Slippage is too high because they got me for $2. And then, so I set my slippage for 0.1%, which on stables is usually okay. But HPD is not the most stable, you know. And so the 0.1% failed. And then it did 0.2%. And I still got sandwiched just for less, you know, just for like 80 cents this time instead of $2. And I think Revised Sociology was saying that, you know, the gas fees on Polygon are just so low that these bots are willing to do that.
Right.
I mean,
well, it doesn't cost any, there's no person out there clicking buttons. They're just, right. You know,
it's just, it's
they
just
log in once a day and see, oh, I sandwiched 1,000 people today.
Yeah. Great. Think about it. I mean, make hundreds of dollars, if not thousands of dollars a day. I'm jealous.
Yeah. So if the sandwicher is in this audience, just stop.
Stop immediately.
My money's on no, but.
Well, you know, they have to figure out what pools to monitor.
You know? True. So just, you could be right.
I believe that they monitor pools with lower liquidity and high trading volume. I think that's how they find them, personally.
That makes
sense. And PHBD has had days where it does $70,000 in trading volume, which is nuts. I've been looking at the fees that my position has earned. So I put in a PHBD USDC position when the pool opened, and I've just been tracking how much fees I've earned from the trading fees, and it's a couple $100. It's great. So that's just extra APY.
Yep.
Just printing money, $2 at a time.
Oh yeah.
I don't think they're gonna stop, Neil, even if you ask politely. It's basically free money. Cat wants some free money.
But it's my free money. It's not free to me.
Yeah, well, all I can think of is right now is the movie Better Off Dead with the paper boy. I want my $2.
How does he get that? He's too young.
Barely anyone probably gets it. That's actually an inside joke with me and my mom. My mom loves that movie. We used to say that it came up with something about $2 and it just became a thing. And the whole movie. Like, $2. Yeah.
So for those who don't know, in peak 80s fashion, the school bullies were on the ski team.
So. This is true. Too funny.
Good times. Though.
Good times. That's why they're remaking all those movies. No one's original anymore. These smartphones ruined creativity. They just remake everything from the 80s and 90s.
Well, you know, it's more profitable. That's all.
Apparently.
You know,
so much more is that?
Audience.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you get all the nostalgia from, you know, guys like us.
Yeah, all the Gen Xers who have disposable income these days.
Speak for yourself. I'm not crypto rich.
You're crypto rich-ish.
I didn't get into Splinterlands somehow. I don't even get that. Well, amazing.
You're doing all right. Speaking of which, you know, we are coming up on the hour.
We are.
If anybody wants to check out the Monster Maverick show later on, it's on Splinterlands TV. Splinterlands.tv is the stream. It'll be at 6 o'clock Eastern, I think.
That's tonight?
That's tonight. Every Tuesday. Wow.
I like that. I may jump in for a little bit to catch up on Splinterlands before the SPS launch, the PSPS launch.
Well, it's interesting. You know, the SPS inflation just got cut way down by about 40%. Right. You know, that's going to be helpful. And then we've got a couple of demand events coming up.
How are PAX doing, by the way? Chaos PAX?
They're slow. On the secondary market, they're at like 2-something. On the there's still like 7 million left to go before the end of, or 6 million, 6 million and change to go before the end of the edition. In fact, I was having an argument on Discord with somebody the other day, and they were saying, it's like, oh, you know, the price of Bitcoin doesn't matter for Splinterlands. It's like, well, I beg to differ. You know,
yeah.
The overall crypto market, the sentiment definitely affects crypto gaming. As far as how much activity there is, but
I believe it.
You ride the waves. Oh yeah, a longboard is asking about IDOs with the tribe, with the Hive Engine tribe tokens. Is that still on the drawing board?
It's the system's all there. Obviously, you can just you can reach out. It depends on a lot of things, but you can reach out. We can look into it.
So if you get no volume,
it's very possible. What's that?
So if you get no volume, don't even bother.
Yeah, yeah. There definitely needs to be a sufficient amount of volume. So that's why Splinterlands is targeted for the PSPS launch. PHive, obviously, PHBD.
Oh, so here's a question for PSPS. You know, so SPS exists on Hive inside the Splinterlands game. It exists on Hive Engine. It exists on Binance Smart Chain. It's also on Ethereum. And do they have one on Wax? Not even sure. So where is the bridge going to come from?
So the bridge is going to be Hive Engine to Polygon.
Okay. That should work.
So can you move SPS freely right now from Binance? I know you could at one point, from Binance Smart Chain to Hive Engine. Is there an arbitrage between them?
Not freely, no. So there was, up until about 2 months ago, you could do it through the game itself, but because of regulatory concerns and all that kind of stuff, they are not doing bridges themselves anymore. So there's a bridge called TerraBlocks, which is unrelated to Luna Terra. They charge 0.25%, I think, plus some gas. I've actually never used that bridge. There's some of the developer players in the community that have created their own bridge. They're on Monster Market, and I believe they also charge 0.25%. So there is arb to be done, and that was being done significantly to even out markets. But I'm not sure if that is still going on now that the bridges have fees. Or if they're just waiting until the arb, you know, reaches a certain point.
Yeah, but the prices are kept in line and tokens can move across them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all we need. That's all we need to keep it all, because I was looking at it and I do know about their bridge situation. So yeah, that's good to hear though that there are bridge options.
Yep. Between the game and Hive Engine is free and open.
Gotcha. Yeah, Polycub's bridge is super interesting, and the governance votes are about to start ramping up. So if you've got X Polycub, get ready for a lot of voting, because there's all sorts of things that you can vote on in terms of the bridge and these V2 vaults. So obviously the big one is yield, but then the other ones are wrapping fees and stuff like that. So it's going to be, it's Polycub DAO. It's the age of the Polycub DAO.
Yep.
Sweet.
So when is that going to be?
The governance votes for yield?
Yeah.
Soon, if I had to guess. No, they're going to be very soon. So obviously there's only two V2 vaults. We need more V2 vaults than, we'll start seeing them, and they're kind of ongoing. I mean, if you've used curve voting, then you know, but they're kind of like ongoing voting to shift yields around.
Yeah. So curve does it weekly, but you know, I think that's just because they're on Ethereum, and you know, gas is annoying. On Polycub, you could have an hourly, you know, snapshot of whatever your votes are.
Yep.
All right.
It's going to get interesting. A lot of utility for Polycub these days.
Yep. Alrighty. People are saying their SPS stacks are sad. My stacks are sad too. They're way, way down.
Oh, I can imagine. You've seen quite the swing in the SPS bag.
Yeah. If we see SPS at a dollar, I'll be super happy.
So what is that, like a 6x from here or something?
No, it's at 8 cents right now.
Oh, it's at 8 cents now?
It got murdered over the last couple of days.
It's murder.
Good time to buy it and then pull it against Polycub.
I bought some yesterday.
It's actually valid. So actually, you know what? I should start unstaking my SPS so that I can move it to the Polycub pool.
Yeah, it's a 4-week unstake.
Yuck. I will go do that now, I guess.
SPS is a 4-week unstake?
Yeah.
I know where my airdrops are going. Previously, they were just getting sold into Leo.
Yep. All right. Cool. Well, it is 1 o'clock or noon or what have you, whatever time zone you're in. So I think it's a good place to wrap it up.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, thanks, everybody. We had a nice big crowd today. Thanks for coming.
So don't let the market panic get you down.
Yeah. We're all going to make it. If you guys get hungry for lunch, you can see me at the local McDonald's. Say hi.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
Wag me. Okay.
Wag me.
Right. I gotta go. Enjoy life in the Sooniverse.
We'll see you guys next week in the Sooniverse. Later. Yeah.